When he and the child returned from New Jerusalem the next day, Saul went out to water the meager lawn, while Rachel played quietly inside. When he came in, the pink glow of sunset infusing the walls with a sense of sea warmth and quiet, Rachel was not in her bedroom or the other usual places. "Rachel?" When there was no answer, he checked the backyard again, the empty street. "Rachel!" Saul ran in to call the neighbors, but suddenly there was the slightest of sounds from the deep closet Saray used for storage. Saul quietly opened the screen panel. Rachel sat beneath the hanging clothes, Saray's antique pine box open between her legs. The floor was littered with photos and holochips of Rachel as a high school student, Rachel on the day she set off for college, Rachel standing in front of a carved mountainside on Hyperion. Rachel's research comm log lay whispering on the four-year-old Rachel's lap. Saul's heart seized at the familiar sound of the confident young woman's voice. "Daddy," said the child on the floor, her own voice a tiny, frightened echo of the voice on the comm log, "you never told me that I had a sister." "You don't, little one." Rachel frowned. "Is this Mommy, when she was not so big?" "Uh-uh, can't be. Her name's Rachel, too," she says. "How can—" "It's all right," he said. "I'll explain." Saul realized that the phone was ringing in the living room. Had been ringing. "Just a moment, sweetie. I'll be right back." The hollow that formed above the pit was of a man Saul had never seen before. Saul did not activate his own imager, eager to get rid of the caller. "Yes?" he said abruptly. "M. Weintraub? M. Weintraub, who used to live on Barnard's World, currently in the village of Dan on Hebron?" Saul started to disconnect and then paused. Their access code was unfiled. Occasionally a salesperson called from New Jerusalem, but off-world calls were rare. And Saul suddenly realized, his stomach feeling a stab of cold, it was past sundown on the Sabbath. Only emergency hollow calls were allowed. "Yes," said Saul. "M. Weintraub," said the man, staring blindly past Saul. "There's been a terrible accident." When Rachel awoke, her father was sitting by the side of her bed. He looked tired. His eyes were red and his cheeks were gray with stubble above the line of his beard. "Good morning, Daddy." "Good morning, sweetheart." Rachel looked around and blinked. Some of her dolls and toys and things were there, but the room was not hers. The light was different. The air felt different. Her daddy looked different.
"Where are we, Daddy?"
"We've gone on a trip, little one."
"Where to?"
"It doesn't matter right now. Hop out, sweetie. Your bath is ready, and then we have to get dressed." A dark dress she had never seen before lay at the base of her bed. Rachel looked at the dress, and then back at her father.
"Daddy, what's the matter? Where's Mommy?"
Saul rubbed his cheek. It was the third morning since the accident. It was the day of the funeral. He had told her each of the preceding days, because he could not imagine lying to her then. It seemed the ultimate betrayal of both Saray and Rachel. But he did not think he could do it again. "There's been an accident, Rachel," he said, his voice a pained rasp. "Mommy died. We're going to go say goodbye to her today." Saul paused. He knew by now that it would take a minute for the fact of her mother's death to become real for Rachel. On the first day, he had not known if a four-year-old could truly comprehend the concept of death. He knew now that Rachel could. Later, as he held the sobbing child, Saul tried to understand the accident he had described so briefly to her. EMVs were by far the safest form of personal transportation mankind had ever designed. Their lifters could fail, but, even so, the residual charge in the EM generators would allow the air car to descend safely from any altitude. The basic, fail-safe design of an EMV's collision avoidance equipment had not changed in centuries. But everything failed. In this case, it was a joyriding teenage couple in a stolen EMV outside the traffic lanes, accelerating to Mach 1.5 with all lights and transponders off to avoid detection, who defied all odds by colliding with Aunt Tether's ancient Vicon as it descended toward the Bassard City Opera House landing apron. Besides Tether and Saray and the teenagers, three others died in the crash as pieces of falling vehicles cartwheeled into the crowded atrium of the Opera House itself.